Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to this special session of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. We're live from Prince Service Center, and we are, in fact, broadcasting from the press conference here at Prince. We are listening to one of Mumia's legal attorneys, and we're just going to go directly into the press conference and let you hear from there, and then we'll come back.
What these are is institutionalized normalization, which I think is a very powerful way of indicating the systemic and critical portion. I'm going to conclude right now and just say that this is an ongoing fight against the state that has kept him locked up as a way of fighting against somebody who was known only as the voice of the voiceless, and he's maintained that through all this year. Framed up because he was a former Black Panther Party member, political activist, a supporter of the organization, and, you know, a radical journalist in every way. Those are the reasons why he was framed. That's why he spent 30 years in prison so far. And it's only been the fight to expose all that, to organize against it, that has him off of death row, which is no justice for him. But it is a defeat for those that wanted him legally lynched.
For Rachel Wilson, give it up. I'm going to go ahead and do that inside and outside the ring. That's the ring with my feet by the court. I like that. I want everybody to repeat that. Solitary confinement is? The institutional normalization of torture. Keep that in your mind, because that's our spin word for now, right? The institutional normalization of torture. All right, we're going to shift gears a little bit and bring in another component of this whole thing, but we didn't bring any culture. You know, it's a press conference, so we didn't necessarily bring any kind of cultural activity. So I'm just going to ask people to participate in one short cultural activity as part of our intro into our next speech. We are family. Oh, come on. Somebody, wait, hold on. I'm not talking about singing the whole song. This is a mic check, okay? Mic check. We are family. Wait a minute. Now, how does the mic check work? You all just want to join in with me, okay? Well, let's do it that way, okay? We're just going to say that line three times, okay? All right? One, two, three, and we are family. Again, we are family. One more time. We are family. Okay, the rest of it will be after the press conference.
Come on,
let's recognize the next generation.
No, you testimony. I heard you guys. It was wonderful. It was excellent to educate. People were calling me saying, I don't believe that death row is better than this whole. No, believe it. Because when Lynch and Peters were messing with my dad, these two officers, I complained so much. I went up to Canville, they transferred him to death row. And I said, why would you put my dad there? Well, Teresa, you'll be satisfied. And when Danny called, he said, Teresa, thank you. He said, it's quiet. It's peaceful. I can hear. I can think. The lights, the hall. They get these students recycled over here.
Wow.
I said, why? He said, they don't want to mess with, you know, the guys on death row. Now, they gave me fair warning. We're going to transfer him. But you will not get those amenities. He will not get a typewriter. He will, whatever. Just long as he's away from Lynch and Peters. My bottom line today is that my dad will be 70 years old this year.
Mm-hmm.
40 years in prison, 30 years in solitary confinement without any infractions. And that's why I push so hard to have him move to death row, because one infraction could jam him right now, even with a 30-year clean record. I spoke with the Program Review Board. They see prisoners every 90 days to determine whether or not they can be released. And it's Mr. Rogers at FDI Green. Matter of fact, we just spoke recently, but last year I had King Downing. He wasn't at the desk, though. And I'm with Rogers. I'm saying, why won't you? When is the time coming? What are we going to do? He said, well, get as the leader, Treat. I said, what? Do you remember that case? I said, wait a minute. I got to get somebody else on the phone because, you know, my memory is so bad. Sometimes you guys tell me something that don't be the truth. So I said, I'll help. But he didn't answer because this machine is still running. And he said, I said, no, my baby has heart disease, prostate issues, eye issues. He said, no, your baby is the leader. I said, no, he's a grandpa. I said, you know what I'm saying? He's the leader. I said, what did you just keep going to say? He's the leader. And we don't want to release him. The recording came up. Please press the button and leave your message. He told us you were recording. I said, well, you know I had told the county it's illegal to record people without their knowledge. He said, well, I don't care anyway, because I said everything is true. So if they say that I'm going to stand for that, no. You shouldn't stand for that either. We're not going to stand for it. Eventually, he's going to be released. And I just thank you, Pam, and everyone else for giving me the opportunity to follow you guys' lead. Like today when we go up to Wessel's office, because when I was telling Danny the other day, I said, what should I do? He said, go with them. All that I'm doing, right? You just stand in the background. Just keep following me. Just keep learning and learning. And it's sad to say that. I had to learn from the Moon family. And it's sad because of the injustice that has happened to them.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'm gonna go on that note, but we got to fight. And we got to keep fighting. And I tell FDI Green that and Wessel's office, I said, you know, we are for a fight. And I, you know, don't take that the wrong way. Oh, we won't, but we don't take threats, and neither do I. That's my dad. Oh, by the way, he got a surgery, another surgery on the eye, about 3 weeks ago. You didn't hear a word. I didn't have to ask you for one letter. I didn't have to ask you guys to make a phone call. You know why? They're trying to justify the solitary confinement. I wrote one letter, and then the response was, oh, we're going to take care of him. We're going to give him the best medical. Why? Because you want to keep him in solitary confinement. I don't care about your medical treatment. You're going to do that. You're going to give him what he deserves, but you're going to release him.
All right. Another hand for Teresa Schultz. The true zero, representing the next generation. And isn't that something she's talking about? She's talking about learning from y'all. I learned from her. Okay. And I don't. Mic check.
You back off.
You back off. If you don't back off. What?
We don't back off.
That's right. Okay. All right. Now we're going to take another our next speaker. So Daryl from the Third World Coalition of AFSC is doing double duty as a speaker and our technical person today.
Hi, brother.
Oh, no, not Daryl on tech.
Oh, you know.
Cruel and unusual. This to be torture. It's been well known for a long time. It's savagery.
Oh, if you don't recognize the voice, who is it? All right.
Incredible crime. All of these things are a true international scandal. It is a striking case, but it's far more general. The maximum security prisons in the United States are horrendous. I mean, they make Guantanamo look like a vacation resort. Same with death row. Executions in the United States are far beyond the one of the very few countries, except one we prefer not to mention, which uses the death penalty either at all or anything like the U.S. does. Noam Chomsky for Mumia Abu-Jamal. Prison and government officials are trying to censor and silence Mumia Abu-Jamal. I stand as one of many Americans who believe that there's a tremendous value in his voice being heard. I and others will fight to make sure that both his voice and his body are free. How much is your child worth? How much is your grandchild worth? These are not trick questions. They arise from the news that North Carolina have recently announced cash compensation to thousands of survivors of their state sterilization program that ran from 1929 to 1974, an astonishing 45 years. North Carolina was but one of the many, mostly southern states, that sterilized people whom it considered as defective. To this, they were supported by authorities as august as the U.S. Supreme Court, which in its now infamous Buck v. Bell 1927 decision found that a state could properly sterilize its citizens, and citizens had no constitutional right to oppose it. For, in the words of Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, three generations of imbeciles are enough. A North Carolina task force recommended payment of $50,000 for each survivor. North Carolina shouldn't be the whipping boy here for such practices took place nationally with federal government support. Historians and scholars, Mary Frances Berry and John Blasingame, in their 1982 work, Long Memory, The Black Experience in America, New York, Oxford University Press, they tell us that as late as the 1970s, the United States Department of Health, Education, and Welfare was forcing 100,000 to 150,000 people to be sterilized annually. Over 90% of these people were black. This horrific state practice and the U.S. Supreme Court's chilling reasoning in support of it gives us some insight into how social prejudices and attitudes percolate into all sections of society, and despite their self-evident madness, are seen by seemingly enlightened sectors as perfectly reasonable, only to be later tarnished as repellent with the passage of time. If a state or nation could sterilize its own so-called citizens but deny people the right and ability to have children, what is such a state or nation but a dictatorship of arrogance and power? One day, perhaps sooner than we suppose, we shall look back at the phenomenon of mass incarceration and the prison industrial complex as proof of a mad society. Perhaps such a future state will pay reparations, I mean compensation to their survivors in 75 or 80 years, if any survive. Noam Chomsky for Mulia Abu Jamal.
Voice holders. For Mulia Abu Jamal, I'm Ron Kovic, author of War on the Foot.
Okay, so as you picked up on that, that was a statement that was read by Noam Chomsky, given that deep history. So one more round of applause for that. And I want to thank Noel Hanrahan for putting that up. He did that on prisonradio.org. And if you know who she is, you need no introduction. She has been holding it down media-wise from the time that nobody cared about this case to the time that the world cared, and it's still doing it. So respect to her. Okay, you know, we're feeling a form of tyranny. Even though this is liberated territory right now, we're feeling tyranny. We're being subjected to tyranny. It's called the tyranny of the plot. If we have some time obligations in terms of the next move that folks are going to be making, and so we have to get through our speakers. So we have to do the space here, but have to do the fact that this is going to be duplicated again elsewhere. So we're going to ask folks to be brief in their comments, but still be thorough, get their points out, and we'll just the brevity of your presentation will influence your ranking at the next press conference. Okay? And I don't mean to pick on it right at this point, but it was really something that's going to apply to everybody. So once again, we're going to shift back into that area of the legal support, legal activism, and our next speaker and presenter is somebody who has his feet in three areas, even though he has 2 feet. And being a legal, being a lawyer who deals with capital cases is only one piece of everything. The second is that he's been outspoken politically, and whenever any issue of Mumia or mass incarceration or justice or race comes up, he's there and he's speaking out about it, far beyond the concentric circle of his legal work and representation. And the third one is his being part of the organized media, where we're still holding on to little crumbs of the mainstream media. And that's his work on Word, WURD. So for those reasons, we're going to bring him up here. Oh, and I also want to say my condolences about my condolences. She's another fighter who was holding it down here. And we're terribly shocked and terribly sorry, and I'm missing her already. Okay, so without any, well, let's just have a moment of silence. If you all would have just thought to me about that, I'm perfectly happy. Fighter who has joined me. Thank you. Without any delay, Michael Kaur.
And I'm definitely going to be brief. And first of all, let me just say 3 words. Off, in, at. Remember that when Quinn at the end, off, in, at. Having said that, I want to thank Pam for all the great work she does, Mona and Johanna and Dr. Tony Montero. I saw him come in. Rachel Lynn, but most important, I want to thank you all. I want to thank you all because if it weren't for the people fighting for Mumia, he'd still be on death row. So give yourselves a big round of applause. Also, I want to give a big shout out to Attorney Lennox Hines because he gave me some ideas I'm going to share with you today. By the way, I know I speak for Lennox and every other conscious attorney when I say this, that we're not naive. We don't expect everyone to go into a court of law and get justice. As a matter of fact, we don't go to court to get justice. We go to court to expose the injustice. And by going to court to expose the injustice, we win each and every time. In terms of what Lennon shared with me and what I've researched, some other lawyers have researched, we came up with 3 approaches for Mumia. One is based on international law, one is based on federal law, and the other is based on state law. International law, federal law, and state law. In regard to international law, it's based on a human rights violation argument. In other words, you saw it here on the presentation. international law has already indicated that solitary confinement is torture. And international law has always said and already said that torture is a violation of human rights. So if you have violation of human rights, if you got solitary confinement, then there's an argument to be made that Mumia's incarceration in solitary confinement violates international law. That's an argument we plan to make. From international law, we go to federal law. We all are familiar with the Eighth Amendment. Eighth Amendment deals with cruel and unusual punishment. And I'm going to explain to you exactly why Mumia's current ongoing incarceration constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. And then, on the state level, there's something called Article 1, Section 13. Article 1, Section 13 says the same and even more than the Eighth Amendment. So when you talk about cruel and unusual punishment on the state level here in Pennsylvania, you're talking about Article 1, Section 13. Now, that's the law explaining what the problem is. Violation of human rights on the international level, violation of the Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual punishment on the federal level, and violation of Article 1, Section 13 on the state level. That's the problem. So what's the remedy? The remedy is this. First, you had Mumia on death row, and you had the federal district court saying that was illegal. You had the Third Circuit Court of Appeals saying that's illegal. You had the U.S. Supreme Court saying that's illegal. So you got all these courts saying that Mumia's incarceration on death row was unconstitutional. So now he's got to go from death row to life. And by the way, without getting too complicated, in Pennsylvania, you got three types of murders. You got first-degree murder, which could give you death penalty or life in prison. You got second-degree murder, which could give you life in prison. And you got third-degree murder, which could give you 20 to 40 years in prison max. So if we had Mumia on death row, and that's unconstitutional, the remedy is to move him to life. But then, in terms of the life sentence, if life, as I said, is based on first-degree murder, based on second-degree murder, you get life. But we find out that Mumia has been held unconstitutionally on death row for 30 years, then we got to fix the problem of life imprisonment based on first or second degree. So if you go from first degree death penalty and then you go down to life imprisonment, and we found out that that's got to be wrong because Mumia didn't serve. If Mumia was legally tried and legally convicted, then he should have gotten life imprisonment. If he was legally tried and legally convicted. But he wasn't legally tried. He wasn't legally convicted, and he spent 30 years on death row. So now we got to say, hey, we took him off death row. We can give him life. If we give him life, that still doesn't fix the 30 years that he spent on death row. So now you need a remedy. The remedy now steps down to what we lawyers consider a kind of third-degree punishment. And the third degree is 20 to 40 years. The way it works in Pennsylvania is, and by the way, I'm going to wrap this up in 3 minutes. If third-degree murder is 20 to 40 years in Pennsylvania, the way the law works in the state is you're eligible for parole when you do half your minimum. So if third degree is 20 to 40, half of 20 is 10. So after 10 years, you should be out. Mumia didn't just spend 10 years in prison. He didn't spend 10 years on death row. He spent 30 years on death row. So now we need a remedy. And the remedy is to remove Mumia from prison. Because you already took him off death row. Now you've got him serving life. And even if you give him a third degree 20 to 40, he should now be out. So you go from off death row, off life, off general population, and out of prison. So the argument is based on international law arguments, federal law arguments, and state law arguments. And by the way, there's something called injunctive relief. Injunctive relief means you go into court and you say to a court, hey, somebody's doing something wrong, and I want you court right here, right now, to enjoin this person, to stop this person. And talking to Leonard Hines, that's his strategy, that we file either a motion for injunctive relief in either a federal court. Why? Because the U.S. Supreme Court already said Mumia shouldn't have been on death row. And then in state court, because state courts must adhere to what federal courts do. That gets kind of complicated, but that's an argument to me. Side issue, without naming names, I spoke to a member of the Pennsylvania Legislative Black Caucus 2 hours ago. And this person, whose name I can't share right now, has a relationship with a certain state official. And without saying too much, if you listened to my show about a year ago, I had that particular state official on my radio show. And that state official did all the right things. I see the timekeeper in the corner, so I'm going to wrap it up in 30 seconds. And that state official said all the right things. And about an hour or 2 hours ago, this other state official who has a direct connection with the person who could get Mumia off the restricted housing unit guaranteed me that he would do all that he could to resolve this immediately. I'm saying that because we've got this legal strategy that is now going to be placed in the back burner. If this state official meant what he said to me at about 9:30, 10 o'clock this morning, then this matter should be resolved. And as soon as I know, Tam will know, Johanna will know, and you all will know. Finally, let me say this. I started this all by saying off, in, and at. What did I mean by that? I meant that we want Mumia off what's worse than death row. We want Mumia in general population, and then we want Mumia at home with his family. Off, in, and at. And finally, the final thing I want to say, people always say power to the people, and power to the people is good, but even better is powers from the people. Thank you.
Give it up, Michael Ford. You know, each transition, I try to pick up a couple of things that person said so that why I could reinforce it. He said so many things. I would almost have to go on as long as he did. But three of them. Mic check. Pause.
Off.
In.
At.
Off.
In.
At. All right. Just remember that. See, we're going to keep these catchy phrases going. I like this other one. Mic check. We don't go to court to get justice. And I'm going to make sure we go to court to expose injustice.
We go to court to expose injustice.
All right. Before I get to the next speaker, I just want to point out one thing, and that is that solitary confinement at one time was a remedy. It was a remedy. And I have to admit that a group of religious people in Philadelphia, that included some Quakers. People say the Quakers did it, but no, there were Quakers that were part of that group, came up with solitary confinement. A lot of times people say, well, now why in the world did they do that? But what were they doing to people at that time? They were flogging people. They were keeping people in stocks outside, whether it was winter or not. They were throwing garbage and excrement on people. They were cursing them publicly. They would put them in a pool and dump them into the river and say, well, if, when we pull them back up, they're still alive. That meant God has forgiven them. If they stayed down there too long and drowned, well, I guess God wasn't approved. Can you imagine leaving that to the hands of somebody, dumping them in and out of water? And they branded you. So it was seen as a remedy at that time and all that, but then we see that it caused a whole new level of torture that we even call no-touch torture. So, and then the last thing, you need the international convention. You know what, I'll save that for the next segment. I was going to list some of those four. So now we're going to, you know what, I will now because it's a good transition. Here are the four, and I don't expect you all to write them right down now, but I can give this to you later. The four areas of international law that are, where we see the main violations are the International Covenant for Civil and Political Rights. That was enacted in 92, and that's Article 7. And the UN Convention Against Torture from 1990. And that's Article 4. The third one, this one is not as well known, but Standing Minimum Rules for the Treatment of Prisoners. This one goes back to 1955, and it's Rule 30 there. And then finally, the American Convention on Human Rights from 1977. So those are the four, and we want to keep invoking, not only saying, oh, it's a violation of international law, because we have to teach people. We have to tell them what law it's a violation of. And the last piece is, Michael mentioned cruel and unusual punishment. Now, why in the world would it say cruel and unusual? Why would it just say cruel? Because they were hedging their bets when they put together the Bill of Rights because they were saying, we will stop cruel punishment, but we don't want to stop the punishments that's going on now. And so because people were being flogged and people were being branded, they said, well, everybody's doing it. So that means it's not unusual. So it's cruel, but it's not unusual. And that's what's holding us back now, where they're saying until we get a majority of the states to ban the death penalty, then we'll call it unusual. So that's the technology that goes on with this so-called Bill of Rights. Okay, now to move on to the international part, we have some great news. And our next presenter is somebody that I don't even have to really call. I don't even have to try to find her. Every time we go to something in New York, I run into her. She's there. So we do talk to each other in other ways, but I do know that she's always on the ground. And so not only is she doing this work around Maria, but also as part of Jericho. And mark your calendars for January 28th. Are you going to talk about that at all? Okay, so the annual dinner for the families and political prisoners is going to be held in New York at the Martin Luther King Center at 3 p.m., okay?
Right.
And so you can go online and get that, but mark that down, support the families. Teresa, you going to be there?
Right.
Teresa's there.
Right there.
Pam's going to be there. Who else is going to be there?
I'll
be there, okay? So this is how we support the people who stood up for us in the last generation are still subject to what we're talking about today. So, without any more delay, Suzanne Ross.
Yeah.
Greetings, everybody. It's great to be here. It really is great to be here because we are fighting back. And because, as Ramon has said way back, what options do we have to fight back? And if we didn't fight back, who would we be? So I am really happy to be here today, even though what we hear about is horrible. And just to review for a minute what we hear about, can everybody repeat after me?
Free Maria!
Free Maria!
Free all political prisoners!
Free all political prisoners!
And finally, abolish the new Jim Crow!
Abolish the new Jim Crow!
Okay, so that's what a lot of this is about, all of that. I'm going to talk not just about the individual self, but briefly about the fight back that we've been waging. We have not been lying down. The movement, when it heard that Mumia was being tortured in his new setting, immediately hundreds of calls were made to all the officials involved. Seth Williams here in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, but the prison officials, the secretary, the superintendent, and they begged for us to stop the calling. And they were saying, look, we have no power, I'm bullshitting about all that kind of stuff, to get us off. But in fact, we never stopped. And soon after, based on the letter that the National Lawyers Guild and another lawyers group put together, we added the demand to that letter of closing down all restrictive housing units in this country. And we put up a petition on the website that many of you know, freemaria.com, and in a very short period of time, we've gotten 5,000 signatures, in addition to all the snail mail, in addition to all the phone calls. And I was looking, I printed them up, it took me hours to print it out, last night, all my names. These are the names, 5,000 names. And they're from all over the world. It is really moving to see this. So the resistance is so powerfully international. And we need to remember that for South Africa, from all over Europe, from all across the United States, and so on. So that's one part. The thing I want to say that we should be, not only do I always talk about the fact that this movement has gone on for 30 years, which is remarkable in a country that consistently has a movement that moves from issue to issue and very short-lived movements. I always remind people, the movement against the war in Vietnam lasted for 8 years. 8 years. One of the biggest anti-war movements, if not the largest, in the history of the United States. The Maria movement has lasted for 30 years. And look at it. Over 1,000 people in Constitution Center in December, thousands and thousands of people writing letters, calling, what can we do? Can we do more? And so on. This movement has not stopped. It's continuing and will continue until Maria is free, all the political prisoners are free, and the new Jim Crow is abolished.
Sure.
So we have a long-term struggle on our hands, and that's our strength. That's our strength, that we understand long-term struggle. And in particular, it's very exciting that we now have three levels of response that we are planning. The city level, the focus on Seth Williams, which some of you are in that task force that was formed to pressure Seth Williams and to get the city of Philadelphia to look at who this man really is and force him to do something he doesn't want to do, which is to demand the repeal, I think that's the word, I think there's another word, of the conviction of Mumia, and that's that movement. The Occupy, that city, Philadelphia, the Occupy Justice Department It is a federal election, the United States on the federal level. There it is. Executive branch of the United States, the Justice Department, go right to the heart of that power. That's the national level. And then we are starting in many, many levels, and Michael Kaur just alluded to it, an international level of struggle. That's powerful. Now, the international level can't force the United States to do anything, because they can embarrass the hell out of it.
Right.
And we have very exciting news to announce, which is that yesterday we had a meeting with the special rapporteur on torture of the United Nations in Washington, D.C. We met with him. We filed a request with him. Originally, this is a long-term, but we have asked Lennox Hines to work on that. We have a long-term strategy around that work. But when the situation came up around Mumia having his torture increased with the situation right now, we went back to Juan Mendez and said, could you look into the situation immediately? And guess what? They have taken the case, they're looking into the situation, reviewing it. People can call him, the press, if the media wants to talk to him, Juan Mendez, I have his card, I can give it to you. Something's going to come of that. We can't announce anything yet, but I'm sure something will come of that, and it's very powerful. And he also educated us about all the other possible international levels and organizations and venues for challenging Mumia's conviction, not only the issue of torture, but Mumia's conviction. So we have a teacher, an ally, who's a gem, and I am thrilled to announce that. And he will surely be working with Lennox Hines, and we will be figuring out many different angles. So this is not a short-term thing. This is a long-term thing. But we're going to do it first. We're going to do it, and we're going to succeed on all three levels, in the city, nationally, and internationally. And that's how we're going to free Mumia.
We are going to wind down this segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation, and we're going to pick this back up when we get up to the Camp Hill location. Until then, we're going to get ready to sign out. We're still at the Friends Service Center, and we'll be returning back approximately around 2 o'clock. Stay tuned. Peace out.